Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickled to death to be with you this Saturday, and every Saturday seems like about the same time for some reason. We gather around here in the studio, well within striking distance, if you don't give me the right answers, is my co-host, the 32nd best fisherman in the United States, Mark Tobin. Mark, how you doing?
Well, good. I need to know what the critique is, what the criteria are for my rankings on this.
You got to be on Outdoor Channels.
I'm not on there anymore.
I know that, and I picked right up on that. So that dropped you way back down. You got to do that major league fishing thing that they do. Have you seen this, Mark?
No, I have not.
Yeah, well, my goodness, you're the only one person left in the United States. But they got about six pros or seven pros out, and they got a clock, and it's a three-day event, and they weigh the fish right in the boat and release it, which I always thought was really cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
And it goes right back in the water, and they all got a referee, I guess you would call him, in the boat. It's really taken off. People like that, on the deal. So that was always I don't know if it was a rub, but especially when it got warmer in the year, the guys releasing all these fish at the weigh-in, which is their moment of glory, which I don't blame them. But a lot of those fish, and the studies found out later that those fish died, because of hot water and
stress
on the thing. So now they're catching that fish off and throwing him right back in, and, he's probably 99.9%. They're going to live, type thing.
Got to be a big difference.
And they're all in different boats, and they keep radioing each other, and then who's in first and who's in second and how many ounces they are. It's
have fun.
Real cool concept.
Yeah, that is.
It is really, really cool on a deal. So I sit down and watch that. Oh, wow. And I've watched it on several occasions now, and I just love it. It's the way it's supposed to be, on a deal. But, the average tournament, they just can't afford to have all that and all the referees in the boats.
Right.
And they got a camera in every boat, and it's pretty in logistics of it would be a nightmare.
Oh, I can't imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
And then trying to film all of that and put that on TV, that's a task.
Pretty darn cool. Have you done any fishing this week, heard anything at all? Everybody I talk to is not going because it's just too hot.
There's a lot less people out on the water, but the fishing is really good. Truman, that algae bloom, they had a rain last week and a lot of wind, and that's kind of pushed the algae away. And the crappie fishing is really, really good. They're out on the main lake, anywhere from 8 to 10 to 12 foot deep. In fact, I was just talking to Richard Bowling just before I came in the studio. He's sitting out on the water getting ready to fish. They've got a crappie tournament down there that he's fishing. Started yesterday,
cool.
110, 120 boats, something like that.
Wow.
And he's 18th right now, but he's feeling pretty good. They've got some big fish found out on the main lake. But he said pole fishing. When he guides, a lot of times he'll spider rig. But he said pole fishing right now, dipping single rods is really, really good. Just find any kind of brush out, and again, 8 to 10 foot of water, main lake flats out on the big open water, and dip it. Put 10 foot of line out, and just dip your jig. Make sure to have minnows. In his opinion, you got to have minnows. You'll go through a lot of little fish, but you get a lot more activity with minnows as compared to without. So make sure to bring a bunch of minnows. But again, just let out 10 foot of line, dip your jig up and down, and you'll find them somewhere suspended. And, again, they'll be in 8 to 10 to 12 foot of water, but they could be in as much as 25 foot of water.
Mm-hmm.
But really good. Catfish is spectacular. They're catching a lot and a lot of blue cats. Trolling up there at KK Island and some of the flats, still catching walleye.
Uh-oh.
And he said they're catching some really big walleye, too.
Yeah.
And I guess the big draw, though, for me is the whites and the hybrids are really, really knocking it up right now.
I was thinking about the weir last night about sunset.
Yeah, it would probably be good, but the lake is a normal pool, so they're not drawing very much water. They're drawing a little bit in the evenings, But other than that, it's, you know, look for windy, you know, stuff, humps, long points, that kind of thing out on the main lake. But there's a little bit of surface activity, and he said that there's some coming up right by his boat. They're not busting the water. They're coming up to the surface, but not making any splashes or busting out of the water, but they are coming up shallow. He said this happened a couple of times to him last week. They thought, at first, they thought it was crappie coming up. Turned out it was white bass. And they're just almost becoming a nuisance to him. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, no. Oh, no, Fluffy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, you know, and that's something, and I, you know, we've been very blessed to fish all over, but, you know, it's just something you put on your bucket list. It's right out of Kansas City here. Be on the weir about an hour before sunset.
Yep.
And it's cool.
And you just don't know what you're going to catch. Anything that swims in the lake will be up there. And the weir, if you don't know what we're talking about, the weir is a dam that was built in front of the dam. And the conservation or the Corps of Engineers learned some things when Table Rock Dam went in. And when Table Rock Dam was built, the water comes out. I think it's 150 feet deep, but it's 55 degrees pretty much year-round. But it turned the river below Table Rock Dam, which before that dam went in, it was one of the premier places in the country for smallmouth bass fishing.
Sure was.
But that cool water that come out of or comes out of Table Rock now, it destroyed the warm water fishing down below that dam. So in order to appease the locals down there, they started stocking trout, and that's a whole different story. But so when Truman was built, they put the weir in, and the weir allows when water is drawn out of Truman Dam, it draws the warmer surface water over the top of the weir so that the water that goes down into the Lake of the Ozarks is the same as the water that comes out of Truman is going into the Ozarks, and it's the same temperature, so they don't have that problem.
Yeah,
so that's the weir, but it makes a great piece of structure.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, this is kind of something that I hear people talk about cover, and they talk about structure, and they get the two confused. People say, oh, yeah, we caught fish. They're all structure, 10 feet deep, structure. But what they're talking about is brush, could be buckets, PVC buckets, crappie beds, man-made stuff.
Sure.
But the difference between there's cover and structure. Structure is the thing that the bottom is. It could be an island, a hump, a point. That is structure. Cover is things that are put on top of the structure.
Yeah.
Like your crappie beds or rock piles or whatever it might be.
Yeah. So. You know, I like that weir. You know, if you got a graph, you know exactly where you're at all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And you can look at that thing and you go, well, I need to be over here. I need to be a little bit over there. You're right. You don't know what you're going to hook up. You know, I think I hooked a Russian submarine there one night. I don't know what it was. Yeah, I never did see the fish. You know, just gone.
That weir is just an awesome structure. It is part of the bottom, but it especially when they're drawing water, it provides a current break on the backside of it.
Sure does.
The water comes over the top of it, and so the bait fish get in there because they don't have to fight the current. Yeah. And, you know, once wherever the bait fish go, that's where you could find the game fish, and that's what they do.
Yeah. Are the gulls showing up?
No, not yet. Not seeing any, and that usually doesn't happen really. It's going to be another couple of weeks, around the beginning
getting
of July.
Close.
Yeah. I'd say a couple more weeks. Yeah. Well, it's the way the weather is, you never know. Everything's a little bit ahead this year.
You know, and we were on Milford fishing, and me and you, or you, but you were on the boat, but we were chasing gulls. And I got to thinking about that later, and I bet people around thought, who are those crazy humans out there running at those birds all the time? And the reasoning is that they see things that we can't see.
Right.
And they start busting those shad up on top.
The white bass or the hybrids do that. They come up, they chase the shad to the surface where the shad can't get away, and then they just tear into them.
Yeah.
Well, the seagulls see that. And so, whenever we're fishing lakes for white bass that have a good population of white bass, we keep an eye to the sky. I mean, just look all around the horizon and just look for – sometimes it's huge amounts of seagulls. Sometimes it's just one here, one there. But you see any of them diving down into the water, they're doing that for a reason. And
well, the entrails or what's left of the fish sometimes float to the top.
Right.
And so the gulls can pluck at off the top. And so all of a sudden you look over and there's 20, 30 maybe on a good day. Maybe not that many. But the gulls, all of a sudden they're going ballistic. Better get over there.
Yeah. You know, Texoma down in Texas, a fantastic striper lake. You'll see groups, I mean hundreds of seagulls down there. It looks like a white tornado. And when you see that, goosebumps, the adrenaline gets going.
That's where you go. And on Milford, the other way around, if you're not seeing the gulls, you know, there's several humps out in there.
Couple and, islands.
And if you don't have a graph again, but you, at Milford, you just, you know, the reality of it is you look over and there's 15 boats on one spot.
Yeah, you know where it,
you know what's going on over there on the thing.
But yeah, the gulls can be a good locator.
Oh, boy. Have you heard anything out of Milford?
No, other than that.
I'm not hearing a thing either.
Not, smallmouth bass fishing has been real good, and the blue cats, just, it's fantastic. But other than that, I have not.
Used to have a bunch of guys that got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, retired gentlemen. I don't know if gentlemen. There's some retired guys, and they would run to Milford. And they would be on the water at 6:30, you know, about 2.5 hours out of St. Joe, 2 hours. And maybe 7 o'clock, and they would fish till it got hot. And then they'd load her up. You know, it's a pretty good pole over there, and very expensive, you know, to do that. And they would go over, and they got on them hybrids, and they couldn't get off of them. You know, they just loved it.
Oh, there's nothing funner.
Yeah, there's some huge, huge hybrids in that lake.
Oh, yeah. The biggest one I've caught a couple that were, well, I've had bigger ones out of Truman, but I've had them up to 10 pounds on Milford. I had a couple of 14-pounders on Truman.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'll straighten out your pole.
And, I'm going to have to slow down here a little bit because we're talking hybrids, and a lot of people are going, what in the world is a hybrid?
Yeah, for some reason in Kansas, they refer to them more as wipers.
Wipers.
But it's the cross between a white bass and the freshwater white bass and the saltwater, and sometimes freshwater, but striper.
Yeah.
So it creates a fish that will live in a lot of different kinds of different types of water depths and temperatures, very mm-hmm. hardy fish,
yeah.
Much more so than... than its parent,
yeah,
the striper, but they can get big. They're just not the characteristic that they got from the white bass is that they're not real long lived, so they don't get as big as a striper. They could if they lived long enough, but they don't.
Yeah,
but you can catch them. I mean, they have been caught over 20 pounds. I think Kansas State record might be around 24 pounds, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I think it is. It's huge. And you know, pound for pound in the Midwest might be the best fight you put other than a carp, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It might be the best fight you'll ever have on a rod and reel.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's edible.
Oh, they're great. Yeah. Very firm meat, very mild.
Very mild. You get the red line, you know, out of them, and then you can work on them a little bit, and they're very edible fish.
Mm-hmm.
Deal. What is the idea on limits over there? Is it 5?
I think it's 2.
2? Is that what it is? Right. It used to be more than that. Didn't they cut it back?
I don't remember it being more than 2. It's been 2 for as long as I can remember.
Whoa. Boy, what a great fish.
Mm-hmm.
What a great fish. Now, when you catch one of these, and they look a lot like a white bass, of course, how do you tell the difference?
If you look at the tongue on a hybrid or a wiper will have 2 oval tooth patches. White bass has more of a kind of a, it's not really heart-shaped, it's kind of irregular-shaped tooth patch, but very distinctive on a wiper or a hybrid, the 2 oval tooth patches
and
in the back of the tongue.
Down the side?
Yeah, and sometimes that can be, you know, they're darker
that
and thicker.
That can be conceived. You've got to watch.
Yeah, it can. Sometimes it's really hard to tell them from a white bass. But so the only, I mean, the best way to identify it is with the tooth patch.
You know, it's a real unbelievably good fishery. And it's right here in the backyard of Kansas City. And I talk to people constantly about it, and they don't know about it. You know, they don't know about Milford.
It's the biggest lake we got in Kansas.
And we got a great show lined up. We were going to talk a little waterfowl here later in the day. And then I come back, I got to talk about it. I ran into some humans, some HSM. But we are sponsored by one of my favorite humans to ever walk the face of the earth is Highway Trailer Sales and Terry Lee. If you guys are pulling around and you guys that are driving these big rigs and you got an 18-wheeler, whether it's, I don't care what kind of trailer you got on, if it's in need of disrepair, if you need brakes, bearings, maybe it's been involved in a wreck or a collision, they got a 10-bay service area. They're the most professional people you'll ever deal with in your entire life. Besides that, Terry will be the, once you meet him, he'll be your friend for life. And they are located at 1850 Southern Road here in Kansas City, just off 435 of Front Street over here by Worlds of Fun, not too far away from there. But I've been around. I've been talking to a lot of farmers that use these guys. Farmers tend to roll them over for some reason, especially during the harvest when they're in a hurry. But there's no finer person, and I mean this from my heart. I went in there to meet him, and I think I've become one of his biggest fans. He's a great guy, and everybody there that I met, except for Secretary, didn't like me. But other than that, he's just a wonderful, wonderful person. And he'll stand behind you 110%, and they're going to be very fair with their prices. Highway Trailer Sales Incorporated, my buddy Terry Lee. Go by and see this fantastic human. Think the world of him. Is located at 1850 Southern Road here in Kansas City. If you need a phone number, it's an 816, of course, 483-3676. And there's a catch to this. Told him you heard about it on WHB. Got to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, in the studio with the 32nd best fisherman in the United States.
How'd I gain a spot?
By talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
cool.
You're doing a lot better. I had a lunch with Boyd Metz, and a lot of people out of the Kansas City market know Boyd and Tom Conrad, and they represent a company called HSM Ammunition. We went over to Famous Dave's there by Capillas. Some people pronounce it Cabela's.
Yeah.
And we had lunch over there. Boy, that food was good.
Really?
Ooh.
What'd you have?
I had a pulled pork sandwich. It was orgasmic, as we say. I didn't want it to end. I should have ordered two. That's how good they were. But anyway, these gentlemen, I met with them, and I use that word lightly. These gentlemen were introducing me into HSM, which I knew about HSM. It's an ammunition manufacturer out of Stevensville, Montana. And for years, they were basically law enforcement ammo reloading components, you know, for pistols. But they've expanded. They started in 1968, and they've expanded and gotten bigger and better. I used to shoot a lot. I used to shoot a lot of paper through the off season, and I enjoy shooting the thing. And
you're
and
talking about rifles.
Rifles, and I used to go shoot all the a lot of stuff. But kind of over the years, got out of it a little bit because one is I'm not as good a shot as I used to be because I'm getting older and my eyes aren't as good. But the recoil of the gun. And
you anticipate that?
Yeah. And I shot big bore rifles and mostly. And so a couple years back, I bought a 243, kind of went back to basics. That's what I hunted with for years and years and years and years and years. And was, you know, I loved that 243. And why I got away from it is beyond the way I want them. They stole one of my prime guns. you know, 243 has a real soft spot in my heart with an awful lot of as I talk to an awful lot of people shooting targets, a lot of people are kind of going back to a 243. Well, again, a 243, yeah, it's got recoil, but it's not bad. You know, you can stand behind a 243 and you can shoot a lot of rounds out of it. Don't bother you as much. So when they were talking to me, they introduced me to this low recoil. HSM has a low recoil 243. So I talked to Boyd, and I said, you know, if we want to talk about that on the air, which is great, but I said, I need to shoot this stuff. It's the way I do business. You know, I need to meet with the people. I need to shoot the product or do the product that we endorse and talk about here on the air. And they're not a sponsor right now. I hope maybe someday they will be. But HSM is unbelievable product. So I went down to the rifle range, got there early in the morning. Well, there's a bunch of old silver hairs get down there and shoot at the same time. And I knew a couple of the guys, but I kind of went off to myself over on the other side and kind of wanted to be left alone about shooting this stuff. So I pulled the first one out, and I guess I've got a form of the yips, which means you're going to kind of flinch a little bit, you know. And just got a T-shirt on because it was so blatant hot, you know. And the first shot of this thing, I went, wow. I couldn't believe it. It reduced the recoil, they claimed, by 54%. I think it's more than that.
No way.
Yeah.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. And it's magic. And so the first shot was high left, which is a sign of the yips, you know.
Anticipation.
Anticipation of being hit by a hammer. And So the next shot, I bullseye, and the next shot, and the next shot, and I shot one of the finest groups I've ever shot in my entire life. And that's not with my good rifle, and that's not with my good scope. I wanted to shoot this gun because it basically was a no recoil pad on it, and I wanted to see what was going on. I grabbed it and went down and shot it. If you'd had a camera on me, the shock and awe on my face was unbelievable. And two or three of the guys came walking down there about that time, and they said, "What in the heck are you shooting?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I'm shooting this little 243 I bought." And I said, "I just loved a 243, but I said, I can't believe it." And then the guy said, "What do you mean you can't believe it?" And I said, "I'm shooting this new low recoil HSM has got out." Well, these guys eat, sleep, and drink the game, you know. And two or three of them said, "Yeah, I know about HSM. They're great products." Not one negative comment. And these are guys that do it almost every day. You know, these guys shoot a lot. And they can talk about sectional density, velocities, recoil. I mean, primer loads, head spacings. I mean, they get into this thing. So the guy said to me, he said, "Could I shoot that gun?" I said, "Well, that's what I brought the bullets here for. Let's shoot them." So he shoots it, and you ought to seen the look on his face.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
And this guy's probably, I don't know, he's 75 or 78 years old. And it was like shock and awe again. So he said, "Can I shoot it again?" I said, "Sure." So he shoots it again and again and again and couldn't get the gun back away from him. And then one of the other guys came down there and said, "Wow, I got to shoot this too." And then I seen them all go up in a huddle. Well, I'm in a hurry and I got, you know, things to do, and but I can't stay a lot. I'm only going to be there about 30, 40 minutes to be around these guys. And I stand there and end up cranking an awful lot of bullets out of this gun. But I have never shot a grouping like this.
That's cool.
And it's all in your head. It's psychological, you know, about shooting a gun to a certain point because you know you're going to get whopped.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
That's part of it. That's why I always said you shoot better with a 22 than you do with a 30-06. It's because of the psychological factor of the gun. I am so impressed. I don't care if they sponsor or not. I don't care. This is a great product. They're available, I believe, at Capillus up here. Some people pronounce it Cabela's. But when this word gets, and they don't do any advertising per se. You know, now they're starting to, but I mean, there's some major magazines picking up on this. They've been around since 1968, so it ain't like it's a brand new deal.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go to Stephenville, Montana, on purpose, and that's to go to this factory and talk to these guys. I'm going to take off here pretty darn quick, I hope, sometime maybe in July or August. But wow,
I just don't understand how you can get that much less recoil.
Well,
and still have knockdown power.
Yeah, and 243 is just sectional density to mass ratio on a whitetail deer is probably one of the ultimate deals. And it does say down here when you read it, and they gave me one of their brochures, and it says, "For peak performance, recommended range of 250 yards. So, you know, it's not the kind of load that you want to shoot at 800 yards or 1,000 yards. Shouldn't be shooting a deer that far anyway.
True.
And here in the Midwest, I would assume the majority of the shots are less than 200 yards, you know, because of the terrain. But you're going to hear more and more and more about it. I don't care if they sponsor or not, but everybody needs to know that this is the greatest product that I've ever shot. Check it out on their webpage on the deal. So, hey, I got to take a little break, but we are sponsored by Reed Chevrolet. Guess what Trevin and the Reed family did?
What did they do?
They bought Car City Chrysler Plymouth up in St. Joe's, Missouri Dodge.
Oh.
And their grand opening is Monday.
Really?
So if you guys are of the elk and you don't like the Chevrolets or the Fords and you always drove a Dodge, which I don't blame because the price is very exceptional. Only thing bad about it, I always said about Dodge was resellability, but that's getting better and better and better and better. But it's going to be the same mentality, non-commissioned salespeople. You know, they are going to turn that store around. They will do great on this thing. I'm so excited that they did this. I you know, they are such good family. They are such good friends. They are such good humans, as we say. So now they've got the Olathe store here. They've got the GMC store up at Tiffany Springs. They've got the Reed Chevrolet up there. Now they have the car, the old Car City Chrysler, which will be Reed Car City Chrysler Dodge. And if you guys are in that elk and you need a vehicle and you want to save a sack of money.
And just a refreshing way to buy a car. The non-commissioned sales staff is just such a pleasure. Yeah,
and they're just going to treat you like family and friends.
That's exactly. It feels like family.
And nobody's going to say, here, sign here type thing. They want you happy. So if you're in the mode, these are the finest people I've bought two. Your boy bought one.
That's right.
I've sent umpteen people up there to buy, and every one of them that I've talked to afterwards said nothing but glowing report about the Reeds and the Reed family and the way they treat you. And that's a breath of fresh air in a car business.
Grand opening Monday.
I think I'll go there. Probably have hot dogs. I think I'll just save up and slither in there like a snake and eat a hot dog with them. Go by, check them out. Reed Chevrolet, Chrysler, Dodge, and Chevrolet up in St. Joe. We got to take a little break. Oh, all right. We'll take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Well, that song brings back old, good old bad day memories.
But do you still have the memory?
Oh, hell no.
No, they're fading.
No. Speaking of memories, how's the boat running? You okay?
Yeah, it's good, but it's just a matter of time. If you have a boat and it hadn't broke down, you just rest assured it's going to.
Yeah.
When that happens, keep Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine in your mind, because that's the place to take it. That Dave Hemme, he's the head mechanic over there, and there's just not anything that he can't fix. So, like I said, if it hadn't happened, it's not if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. You're going to have a problem. It's just the nature of the boat. That's why they call a boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Bust out another 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So take it down there. It's in Belton, the last Belton exit, just to the west side of what used to be 71 Highway. It's 49 Highway now, but Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine, a great place to have your boat fixed. But if you need a pontoon or a Lund boat, you got to check out some of these Lunds. Mm-hmm. They've got a bass boat out there now. You just can't even hardly tell it's an aluminum boat. It's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But a great bunch of guys out there. Keep that name in the back of your mind, Sportsman's Outfitter and
Marine. Think Joe could get me financed on a boat?
I think he can.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. I'd like to have one, but
What would you do with the sclerosis of the river?
Yeah. It's sold. I got rid of
no.
I went to Joe Falco before he became a sponsor. I had a Mercury outboard, and I went to two different mechanics. No one could fix it.
And they did.
In 20 minutes.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah. David Emmy. He won't remember it, but 20, because he's worked on a million of them, but he fixed it in 20 minutes.
Isn't that something? Well, I'm not surprised. But
he knew. He just listened to it, and he said, I know what's wrong with that.
Huh.
I don't know how he did it.
Cool.
They're that good.
Yeah, they are.
They're the best.
Yep.
They can kind of meander around. There's some shade tree guys, but these guys are the best.
Yeah, you can trust them.
Yeah, 110%. Who we got lined up to guest?
Well, joining us now from Heartland Waterfowl. Heartland Waterfowl is an extension of Heartland Bowhunter, and they're based right here in Kansas City. This is a award-winning television show out on the Outdoor Channel. He is Mr. Ronnie Phillips. Ronnie, how are you doing this morning?
Well, I got up early this morning to go buy a new boat, but then I listened to you guys on the radio, and I really kind of peed in my Cheerios and decided I don't want to go do that if I have to go through all that mess. I'm just kidding. Good morning, guys. It's an honor to be on with you. How are you?
Well, great. There's an argument going on. Now, the reason we wanted to have you on is you've got the Heartland premiere coming up a week from this Saturday, and we're going to talk about that in just a minute, but this is a little more important, I think. I hear there's an argument going on. Now, Ronnie, can you sing better, or are you better looking than George Strait?
I would say the singing is probably comparable, but
but what about the looks?
Definitely better looking than George Strait. Now, women might say that he's got a better looking booty than I do, but. That's all right. I think the face is where it's at. No, I'm just kidding. You saw that episode that we filmed in Colorado where I was singing Amarillo by Morning in the pit while we're waiting for the birds to fly.
That's right. That's right.
I didn't know the cameras were rolling, and I was having a good time cutting up in the blind, and he made some blooper episodes that we put up on YouTube.
But can you sing a little verse of what was it? Sing a song about the heartland. Sing a song about the heartland.
That's what it was. Yeah, that's the heartland song. You betcha.
Well, let's hear it. Warm up your voice.
Don't put him on the spot.
Sing a song about the heartland. There you go.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Hey, I'm here all day, guys.
Okay. Well, again, the serious reason that we had you here was you got the Heartland premiere coming up a week from this Saturday. Tell us what that is.
Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for having us on to talk about this. You guys do a great job, and it's an honor to be on your show. And I'd like to real quick just give a shout-out to my friend Mark Davis, who connected me with you guys. And he's a really good outdoorsman, a very ethical man that I look up to. And so I appreciate the connection there. And we are real excited about the event that's coming up a week from today. It's the Heartland premiere. For those who don't understand or didn't know, two television concepts from right here in the Kansas City area. Heartland Bowhunter started all of this about 11 years ago with their TV concept, and it has just grown to extraordinary recognition. They, for the longest time, and I say this humbly, that outdoor, or in particular hunting shows, was really kind of centered around a lot of bad rock and roll music and just a bunch of kill shots.
Right, exactly. That's true.
And there was not a lot of cinematic value that went into telling that story. And frankly, there was not a lot of genuine storytelling going on. I mean, you get a camera and you get into the post-production bay and you can make anybody look like what is now called these days a professional hunter, which is the most ridiculous term that is ever thrown around, because let's all face it, there's experienced hunters and then there's just hunters, right? Like, yeah, we're all out there doing the same thing, and none of us are professional. We don't carry a card in our wallet saying that we're professional hunters, but for some reason, if you're on TV, you're considered a professional hunter, and we don't look at it that way in any capacity. We're just like anybody else. We do have the luxury of doing it more. We do have the luxury of traveling North America and sometimes beyond to pursue different animals and species and tell that story through a camera. But that being said, we screw up just like the weekend warrior, and we tell that story because that is ultimately what is most relatable to you and everyone else that's watching, right? So but we want to make sure that we're doing that in a way that is very tasteful through the lens of the camera. I mean, it's a very cinematic movie style approach to a documentary of our life out on the road, chasing the species. So all that being said, that kind of gives you an idea of what the TV concepts are about. Heartland Water Bowhunter was on the air for roughly, 6 years or so before we, being Heartland Waterfowl, came out. I worked in radio for 22 years and 10 of it here in Kansas City at Q104, and kind of got to a point in my life where I had hit my ceiling and was trying to figure out what my next move was going to be. And so having a passion for the outdoors, I wanted to figure out how I could parlay all of my experience in media to my passion for hunting and in particular waterfowl. So Mike Hunsucker, who runs Heartland Bowhunter along with Sean Luchtel, I was able to meet Mike through a family friend of my wife, and we got to know each other. I started working with those guys, helping them out with some marketing things on a local basis, and kind of, I guess, earned my keep to where we started strategizing a way to create an extension of their brand. And lo and behold, we created Heartland Waterfowl, which is now into our fifth season that's about ready to come out on the Outdoor Channel. And 3 years ago, when we all started airing at the same time, because HW came out as a first quarter concept while HB was a third quarter concept, when we both landed in third quarter together, we said, look, let's make a premier event that is going to bring as many people in this region together. We want to do it free. We're not looking to make money on this, but we want to tell our story. We want to kind of give back to the community. And so what we've done is, this is our third year of the Heartland premiere. It's absolutely free. We have live music. This year, Noe Palma, local country musician, is going to be performing live. Yeti, who is a great supporting sponsor of us, is giving us 300 of the 26-ounce insulated Rambler bottles.
Cool.
300. There's laser engraved logos on the bottle. 150 of HB, 150 HW. We're giving those away.
Wow.
To the first 300 people in the door. We've been doing this, like I said, for the last 3 years. Typically, we've done it at the Uptown, and it's been we've had people lined up 3 hours in advance, 2 to 3 blocks long, and darn near 95 degree heat to be one of those first 300 people in the door. But we also have lots of great prizes. Remington is another supporting sponsor. They're giving us a new VersaMax shotgun. Bowtech is a great sponsor for Heartland Bowhunter. They're giving away a free bow. We got stuff from Hunter Specialties, Mojo Outdoors, Lifetime Decoys. I mean, every one of our sponsors, Carlson's Choke Tubes. There's many, many, many sponsors that are contributing and offering product to raffle off in this. And that money that's raised is just essentially going back to pay for the venue, pay for the artists, just pay for our costs that we have to hold this event next Saturday at the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center next to Bass Pro and Independent.
And the event ends with, are you going to premiere your shows?
Right, so that's the whole point. I guess I didn't get to that, right?
No.
The whole point of the premiere event is that we're going to show one episode from each concept, Heartland Waterfowl and Heartland Bowhunter, before it even airs on network television. It's kind of our kickoff to the new season. And I talked about people locally, this kind of giving back to the community. This has actually been a deal where it's kind of grown beyond just Kansas and Missouri. We've had people come in from Michigan, Iowa,
cool.
Colorado, Texas. Wow. I've had people from Pennsylvania fly in. I mean, it's like people who are hardcore fans will fly in and drive hours to come to this event over the last 3 years. I know for a fact we have a couple coming in from Colorado this year. We have a couple different groups of people coming in from Iowa. So I know another group is coming up from Texas. So it's we're looking to about 800 to 1,000 people in attendance. Heartland Waterfowl will show its episode that we filmed in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. It was an early season Canada goose hunt. Plus, we did some fishing for kings on Lake Ontario. So that's one of our really good trips. We hunt with some really good buddies up there. We've been going up there for the last 5 years. So we'll show that episode. But I work on the Heartland Waterfowl side, but I'm really, really excited to see the episode that's going to follow at the premiere. And that's the one from Heartland Bowhunter, where Mike Hunsucker is on a Kodiak Island brown bear hunt. And he shoots a giant bear in the spring. He actually shot this bear last spring. So people have been waiting for this footage. They've seen the pictures. They've seen the content, you know, the still picture content that we've had out there on social media. But nobody has seen the footage yet. And so this will be the first time ever that anybody will get to see this footage of this 9-foot bear that Mike had shot at 12 yards with his bow on Kodiak Island. And it's going to be an hour long special episode that the Outdoor Channel is going to run,
where
we typically do 30-minute episodes. So this one is going to be a treat. And anybody that's listening to this who comes next Saturday to the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center is going to get to see it before anybody else.
I heard you and Mike on with Stephen St. John and Nate Mukady this past Tuesday, and mm-hmm. I heard Mike talking about this hunt. It just sounds incredible, and that's up close and personal with a big bear. I don't know that I'd be able to
too close.
Yeah, I'd ruin a good pair of underwear. I'd really, you know. Well, that'll be worth coming out there just to see that.
Yeah, I really do believe so. Like I am more excited to see that than I am to see my own episode. You know, like this is going to be and here's the other part about it. Like if you've ever thought Kodiak Island or that part of the country, it is a sportsman's paradise.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely beautiful. And you add the cinematic value that we, and I guess in this case Heartland Bowhunter, applies to their storytelling when it comes to capturing this experience, it is going to be one of the most beautiful pieces of television work. And of course, naturally, I'm biased, and I recognize that. But I really do believe it's beautiful outdoor video pieces that you will have ever seen. You're going to be blown away. So we're very proud, and we're very honored that the people of this area, Kansas City and the surrounding areas, that have taken such a liking and being honored of us, I guess, that we do this locally. This has been a treat. We always try to keep things in perspective, and we're very honored and very blessed to be able to do this.
Well, I tell you, watching your show, you have some of the most spectacular footage and beautiful shots, but you've got one heck of a camera crew that you work with. Congratulations to you and them. What a great job you guys do.
Thank you. Well, I'll speak to that just for a moment, because we don't really have a camera crew per se. The cool thing about our show is, well, we do have our owners. For example, Mike and Sean are, you know, they're the guys who run Heartland Bow Hunter, and Logan Burdett, myself, run Heartland Waterfowl. We aren't the main guys on the show or the hosts, I guess, if you will. I mean, we have to put in our names there sometimes when we fill out information on the forms for the Outdoor Channel. But where I'm going with this is that there's no one person bigger than the other on these teams.
Right.
So if I'm in front of the camera and I'm hunting one day for the waterfowl show, the next day I'm filming and I'm behind the camera filming those guys.
Really?
So yeah,
that's
we all
good
think
idea.
Filming, and Mike and Sean do the same thing, and so it's the same theme with everybody at Heartland Bow Hunter. We, you know, to be a part of this concept, because trust me, you get a part of a TV show. Anybody who's ever hunted a duck or hunted a deer thinks that they can do a TV show.
Which, oh, I know.
You know, and so we get hit up a lot. Well, the first question is do you know how to run a camera?
Yeah.
And most people, if anybody, knows how to run a camera, right? So it's you have to have as much passion for knowing a camera, running a camera, having that passion for the creativity of telling that story in a creative way, telling that, you know, because we want to be able to tell this story without having to sit down in front of the camera and tell the story. We want the lens of the camera to tell the story creatively, and those are the people that we look to work with. So yeah, obviously the hunting is a huge dynamic and a huge component to our success, but if you don't know how to run a camera, then it doesn't really fit with our brand.
You know, the people watch a show and they think it's just all fun and games, but what are some of the challenges that you face trying to do a TV show?
Right. Well, because I do the waterfowl show, I mean, it's easy for me to speak to that. You know, duck hunting is hard enough without having to put, you know, two or three cameras poking out of the blind. or, you know, in particular, like if you are, you know, you got a west wind in the morning. You know, obviously, as a waterfowl hunter, you want the wind to your back, right? And you got the sun coming up in your face. Well, that sun reflects off the lens of those cameras.
Oh, yeah.
The ducks see that. The geese see that. So, you know, the biggest struggle, we've kind of found ways to work around it now to, you know, be able to be successful. But the biggest thing when we were starting as a waterfowl show was trying to figure out how to hide these cameras. We could go out there and kill ducks. We knew how to scout. We knew how to call. We knew how to hide. And when I say we knew how to call, we're not by any way, you know, world champion competition callers in any capacity. We know how to do the basics, because we, in our areas, you don't have to be a championship caller to kill a duck or a goose. You know, you can just go out there to do the basics. And actually, if you are hunting the X, if you're out there, if you're putting in your work behind the windshield and you're scouting and if you're setting up the next morning on where they want to be, then calling is just a small part of it. Mm-hmm. I think to a certain degree, that part is overrated. But my point is we knew how to kill ducks. We knew how to kill geese. But we were trying to figure out how we were going to kill them on camera because the birds then wouldn't want to finish. And it was a real kick to our ego because we felt really good about hunters before we started using these cameras. But we figured out some ways and some tricks to get around doing it. Obviously, the weather, you know, like I talked about, the sun reflecting into the lens, that makes the conditions really tough. Sometimes when you're filming from your back in a layout blind and you're in sub-zero temperatures and your hands are sticking, you know, straight up vertically, you're not getting a lot of blood flow into your hands. So your hands, like, obviously you guys have waterfowl hunted, but, you know, sometimes the birds don't want to finish on the first pass. They just want to circle and circle and circle and circle until they kind of figure out how they want to make their final approach or figure out what's going on down there on the ground in that feed. And you're sitting there trying to film this when it's 7 degrees with a stiff 15, you know, mile an hour wind from your back. Your hands get so cold that you can't feel them. Like, they're numb. And all you're doing is trying to do the best you can to try to keep everything in focus and have everything in frame perfectly and moving the camera very smoothly and not jerky. That's really, really difficult. You just don't, you don't have any blood flow because your hands are sitting, you know, straight up. You're laying on your back.
Right.
So those are just a couple examples. Obviously, trying to keep the cameras safe in, you know, in elements that are not conducive really to cameras. Honestly, you know, you're out there in the dirt or the dust or the wet, and, you know, the snow or the rain or the, you know, a pond or a lake. And so none of that stuff's real conducive to electronics. And trying to, you know, pull all of this off while keeping that really high expensive technology that really helps us do what we do, you know, safe and allowing us to do it every day.
Ronnie, you got to be thinking about next season. Where are you guys going to kick off? Are you going to go to Saskatchewan to hunt? Are you going to stay here in the Midwest? Or what are you going to do?
We're going to do a little bit of what we've done in the past, and we're going to change up a few things. Naturally, Canada and Saskatchewan is, like, easily one of our favorite places to go every single year. First week of October, like, you get up there, and you know, naturally, that's probably one of the other things that's challenging about doing a waterfowl show is that we're planning these trips months in advance. But in all actuality, you can only be as successful as the migration. You know, you're anticipating months in advance that the birds should be at a certain location by that time, but it doesn't always work out that way. So, but typically speaking, in the first week of October, we can get up in Saskatchewan and we can get into a lot of good feeds of juvie snow geese. You know, naturally the ducks are in season. We don't shoot a lot of ducks that time of year because, you know, they're typically brown ducks. They're not all plumed out yet. But you got every waterfowl species you can imagine in season during that time. But to answer your question, the one thing that we are going to be doing that is new this year, and we're still trying to, you know, put together all the details, and actually Logan knows a little bit more about it than I do, but we're going to go to Alaska this year.
Oh, cool.
We've got a buddy who we met a couple years ago at the Torrington, Wyoming Two-Shot, which is another one of our episodes that we'll be featuring this year. We went up there. It's a competition. This guy is he's actually from the Torrington area, but he is a guide up in Alaska. He's a fishing and hunting guide. And after knowing him for a couple of years, he's invited us up there to go up and shoot some ducks, and he's going to take us out and do some fishing for kings. And we're really, really excited about telling that story. We're going to go down to Arkansas. We've only done that once before. We're going to go down to do that again, maybe head to Oklahoma.
I hate to interfere with you. You're such a great guest, but we're running out of radio time here again. Now, where's this all take place here?
The Heartland premiere is coming up on Saturday, a week from today, at the Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center. The doors will open at 6:30 when we give away 300 of those Yeti Ramblers. And we'll do live music at 7, and the premiere will start at 8.
And this is free to the public.
Absolutely free to the public.
Cool. Ronnie, thank you for getting out of bed and joining us on air. Will you please come back someday?
Would love to.
Ronnie Phillips,
thank you guys.
Heartland,
really appreciate what you do.
You have a problem figuring out things to say, don't you?
The old 22 years of radio experience.
Yeah, there you go.
Ronnie, you're great.
You're a wonderful human. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, buddy. All right. Boy, this thing goes by too quick.
I know.
I got it talked about. We have a sponsor, King City Lumber Company, up in King City, Missouri. If you've not been to their website, kingcitylumber.com, for you guys need an outbuilding, whether a loafing shed for my co-host Mark Tobin, whether you need a new cabin in the woods, whether you need a garage built up behind your house, maybe you need a machine shed for your combine and tractor, there is no finer humans. These guys are the greatest. I hear more people walk up to me and say, wow, I just love these guys. So please check them out. You'll be on their website for about 20 minutes. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's all right. KingCityLumber.com. Go by and see them.
Got to get on our Facebook page. There's a picture of a catfish on there. It looks like it mated with a cow. It's black and white. It's called a piebald catfish. Check that out on our Facebook page. You won't believe this picture. Okay. It's Midwest Outdoors Sports Radio 810 WHB. Get on there and check out that fish. It is just unbelievable.
Well, cool. Boy, I tell you what, time flies by. That wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in the great outdoors.
Happy Father's Day to the fathers. So long, everybody.